Welcome to the Canadian PGA Radio Show. Jeff Degman here alongside Scott Pritchard in the studio at On Purpose Productions in Newmarket, Ontario. And Scotty, we're back. We're fatigued. We're beaten. We just got back from a Labor Day weekend, a little team event we always play in, the annual Bearskin Cup. Tough loss for us, but talk about the Bearskin Cup, but also talk about team events in general. I think that I have a few friends that they love golf and they never play in a team event, and I keep telling them you have to play in a team event. It's so much fun. It's so different, and they can't really fathom how different it is, but yeah. It is so much fun. It's almost the highlight of the entire season for me, really. But tell us about your experience.
Well, this is my second year playing, and this year it was better than last, and I think it had to do with, becoming more familiar with the guys on the team. We all, there's a few guys from the golf industry and there's a few guys from outside the golf industry, and we all come together and have a great weekend. Obviously a lot of golf and a lot of extracurricular activities.
Yeah.
But you're right. The team event, what's funny about the team event is that when I was younger and, I'd get invited to play in a scramble and I'm like, oh man, I don't want to play in a scramble. Like I want to play my own ball.
Yeah.
And I realized, and I made a comment to you and in fact to the team, I said, it's so much fun playing in a team event, especially when you're playing with good players. The highlight of the weekend, Jeff, for us was we played a three-man scramble.
Six-man scramble, three on three.
And we were three up after seven, all square going into 17, won 17 barely, and then tied 18 to win one up. And it was
in front of the crowd. We had all our buddies. We were the final group, right?
And it was a highlight of the year for me. And the best part about it is I haven't been playing well this year, as many know. And I played actually really well in that. Yeah. And I think the scramble sort of alleviated some of the pressure that you have when you play individual stroke play. And it was just awesome.
It's funny. I up until a few years ago, I really didn't play in anything like that for the past 5 years. And all of a sudden now I have about three of those on the go. And I play in one a couple of weeks or probably a month from now, actually, where it's the superintendents versus a golf industry type thing, right? Which is organized by Ian Andrew, golf architect. And it's neat too. Like you don't need to have a whole weekend, folks. I mean, we do it with his. We try and get two courses nearby, or we just do one golf course and you play 36 holes and you go 9-hole match. Then all of a sudden ninth hole's over and I go to the 10th hole and I play with somebody else. And we play another, and it's alternate shot or it's best ball, whatever it happens to be. And it's awesome. It's much fun. You get right into it. And sometimes you try and wear similar uniforms and that kind of stuff. It's cool.
Even, we just had this past week, the Ping Ontario PGA head professional event, and it's a 27 holer, 9-hole scramble, 9-hole better ball and 9-hole alt shot. And the guys, after they come off, they love it. Even the guys that don't play very well, the emails that I've received following the event from some of the players, I had a great time. Don't make sure this event isn't off the schedule. And they totally love it.
And they
finished
35th or something like that.
Yeah,
right?
No money. I mean, it's not overly expensive play, but, it's a great deal. We have a little cocktail party after. There's no real formality in terms of, have to wear a suit jacket and that sort of stuff. Guys can go in, have a beer, have a Diet Coke, whatever they want, and then, book it. And Ping is an awesome supporter of that event. Actually, Dave Wilson and Trevor Fackrell. Dave is a member at Burlington where Trevor's a professional, and they were after a round one day having a couple beers on the patio at Burlington at the old clubhouse, and they said, how do we get involved? How do we come up with it? And they came up with that event on the spot.
Cool.
And unfortunately, I haven't had Trevor. He's been busy in the last few years, but maybe we'll get him out next year to play.
Well, it's amazing because, I mean, golf's so individual, right? It's such an individual game. I think that getting to play in it, which is why you see guys in the Ryder Cup, the guys love it, right? They see remember last year or 2 years ago when Boo Weekly's doing the horse down the tee deck and Anthony Kim's going bananas, right? And they're just going nuts. And I'm pretty sure they don't get paid a cent for that thing.
No.
It's just like playing playoffs in the hockey, right?
And exactly. Well, speaking of which, our Titleist Cup, which is coming up, and the guys don't get paid for that at all. And guys just, they love to be on the team. And there's a couple, Ian Doig was the captain's pick and he sent a letter to the whole team. He's so grateful that Gar Hamilton, our captain, picked him. And we're going actually to Royal Quebec this year.
Oh, cool.
Which is hosted the, I was doing the press release last night. It'll be sent out shortly, but four Canadian PGA championships, some nice winners. Leonard won twice there.
Trevino.
And I've never heard of, but Henry Martel. But I'm sure, obviously he's a nice player winning the Canadian PGA championship. And I'm really looking forward to that, going to play an old style golf course, and the clubhouse looks unbelievable.
Yeah.
So it'll be awesome.
Now let's talk about the PGA Tour, Scott. Charlie Hoffman, winner. And do you watching the golf on the Monday, the Deutsche Bank? It still kind of bothers me that it finishes on Monday, but that's just me. But Deutsche, I know why it does, but finishes on the Monday there, and Hoffman just pouring in birdies like crazy. This is the guy you can't miss, folks. He's got the hair, he's got the green gloves, the green shoes, the green belt. Sponsored by Waste Management, obviously, but this guy's game is so good. And it's funny because he said afterwards that he was one of the worst bunker players. He said he was like an average golfer out of the bunker, mm-hmm. which hard to believe, right? And worked on his bunker play for about a year with a short game guru, basically. Yeah. And you saw him chip in, or pitch it in from the bunker in the mm-hmm. one hole there. And pretty cool story. But did you watch some of the golf there, Scott, with the Charlie?
Yeah. The shot that he hit out of the bunker that they showed in slow-mo was like the awesome. Perfect scenario, right? Yeah. It was so good. And he's funny the way he dresses with the green and the flat brim hat and
long hair,
old school. But no, great player. Not overly disappointed that he didn't get picked for the Ryder Cup. I think, not to switch gears here, but I think they did a great job who they picked for the Ryder Cup. I know there's a certain number of players that were upset, including JB Holmes, who made it public, which, he went and shot 77 yesterday, which hopefully that wasn't on his mind. But Hoffman is, it's always good to have characters like that win, right?
Sure. Now, I got a quick Hoffman story. I caddied for a Canadian PGA member and a friend of ours, a Canadian Tour player. He actually had a chance to qualify for the British Open one year, and it was at Oakland Hills, which is a phenomenal spot in Michigan there. And went down there, and it was 36 holes, 18 in the morning, 18 in the afternoon. And I'm supposed to be in the group and caddying for him with Tim Herron and Ron Filo Jr., who's one of the top PGA of America club pros. And all of a sudden, they both don't show up. They don't say a thing. They don't show up. So we're on the first tee, and the starter goes, "Well, you guys can't play by yourself." So he goes, "Play the guys behind you." So sure enough, guys behind us is Daniel Chopra and Charlie Hoffman. And this is back when Chopra was one of the best players or one of the better players on the tour, and Hoffman's kind of up and coming. And we played 36 holes with these guys, and it was awesome. Hoffman, I was so impressed with the guy, the way he hits it. A couple of holes, he turned to his caddy and said, "Why don't we try and hit a step on a a laser hook with a hybrid here?" So all of a sudden. Yeah. My buddy hits a driver out there, 280, and all of a sudden Hoffman hits a 310-yard hybrid, and it was just this sweeping 20-yard hook that just kept bouncing and bouncing and bouncing. Yeah. But he knew he could control it perfectly, and I think it's like a two hybrid type thing. But even the way he putt too, when he puts it was unbelievable. It would always roll out one revolution more. He always thinks it's going to stop, and then all of a sudden it trickles into the cup, and he shot 67, 68 in the two rounds, and he played phenomenal golf. And it was funny because he. My buddy there was in a bunker on the one par four, uphill par four, fairway bunker, and he should have hit about a 7-iron out, and he grabs a 5-wood. I'm thinking this is going to be a disaster, right? And all of a sudden, you can tell when PGA Tour players come over and watch a guy hit, that it's a tough shot to pull off, and they want to see what happens. And usually it's like robots, right? They all in the fairway, green, whatever.
Yeah.
But when you see a guy with like a ball plugged in the face or a guy who's got a crazy flop shot, they always come around close and watch the guy. It's really, if you watch the telecast, you always notice that. But all of a sudden, Hoffman and Chopra show up beside the bunker wanting to watch the shot. My buddy hits a shot out. It was like a 230-yard shot uphill. It's a 5-wood to like 7 feet.
Wow.
And Hoffman just like, that was one of the best shots I've ever seen in my entire life. And just pumping him up a little bit. And Hoffman made it and got in the British Open there. And he said to my buddy there, he said, you've got a great game. Keep it up. Really impressed, whatever. And sure enough, 2 weeks later, my buddy won on the Canadian Tour there.
Yeah.
And, I know it's because Hoffman there was telling him, how kind of
get your confidence,
up, sure, right? Yeah. And, it was funny because Hoffman is kind of a raw guy. Like his caddy on the one hole was holding the pin for him because he had a really long putt, and he's going on the one side and he's really confused back and forth, and he can't pick a side. And Hoffman's like, "What are you doing?" And there's all these people around there watching us on the green. And the caddy goes, "Well, I can't figure out what side I want to stand on." He goes, "You're wearing tennis shoes. No one cares. Just pick a side." And he's yelling at his caddy, right? And then he rolls it in from 40 feet, right? And everyone's like, "Who's this guy?" But obviously a great champion, and I think this guy's here to stay for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, two guests today, Scott. We've got Philip Jonas, Canadian PGA member and national champion twice, 2004 and 2006. I believe 2004 was
Wolf Creek.
You were there?
I wasn't.
You were not there. You were there, I believe, for the year he should have won again for a hat trick. Tell us about that.
He made some bad swings, and Eddie Boudreau from Victoria, they were playing together actually, and Eddie just snuck
their
in.
Their buddies, basically. Yeah,
they're friends. But Eddie, relatively unknown definitely in Ontario, quite an accomplished player out in BC. And Phil just had a meltdown on the golf course, and just, one of those rounds where he couldn't keep together. And it was funny because I was doing the media after, and Eddie was awesome. His family was there. He just had his newborn baby girl there.
Just one. And, obviously pumped,
and taking pictures. And I said, "Hey, Phil, can I get a word?" And Phil looked at me, goes, "No," and walks away. And I was an intern at the time. And I'm like, "Oh my, like, I didn't know what to do."
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Oh, he's not a
grumpy.
Nice guy." And then the next year, when he won at Pinoca, I was doing the media calling with Rima Katorji, who used to work at the Canadian PGA, and awesome on the phone. And then next year he came to the Briars and we played a practice round together and, you know, just developed a friendship out of there. And then in at Predator Ridge too, like he played really well there. I remember he eagled 17 and.
Well, you and I are both there.
Nice guy.
Yeah. He kind of, he almost stole it there from Bryn Perry in a way, right? Like everyone thought Bryn Perry's going to walk away and win that, but, he's playing in 2 weeks in our Canadian PGA Assistance Championship, sponsored by Titleist and FootJoy and Simmons Insurance, and great event, and probably arguably our, not arguably, it is our most talented field. It's almost like a Canadian Tour event. These guys out there, Mike Belbin, Jamie Kerouac, who shot 25 this year, Daryl James, Dave Levesque, Brian McCann from Ontario. I mean, you name it, these guys are there. And obviously from BC, Bryn and Phil and Eddie Boudreaux, and there's somebody else from BC. Like the BC, it seems like the competitive juices are flowing in BC. They've got a bunch of different tours and they're playing pretty well. So we'll have Phil on, talk to him about his career. And he's got some great friendships with Nick Price and some other guys that he's run up with, a South African himself. And
Ernie.
Who?
Ernie.
Oh, yeah. Ernie. Yeah. Yeah. Ernie. The way for Phil talks. Yeah. And then we'll have on Jason Logan as well and talk about the rankings, top 100 golf course rankings just came out with Score Golf. Controversial indeed. Some people love it. Some people hate it. Some people don't care. Either way, people are talking about it, which is good for Score Golf. So we will head a break right now and we'll get on the phone Mr. Phil Jonas all the way from BC to talk about his career and playing in a couple weeks in the Canadian PGA Assistance Championship when we come back on the Canadian PGA Radio Show. Welcome back to the Canadian PGA Radio Show. Jeff Dykman here alongside Scott Pritchard. And Scott, joining us now, a friend of ours, Mr. Philip Jonas, a guy we've had some good laughs with, played a little golf with, a phenomenal player, maybe one of the best in the country, really. 04 and 06 Canadian PGA Assistance Champion, a guy who's a great teacher, great player, been a commentator as well, and he's actually getting ready to play this weekend in the Vancouver Golf Open. Phil, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Scott and Jeff for having me.
Now, Phil, tell us about, you know, I want to get right into, first of all, teaching, actually, before we get into your playing side, but tell us about what you've been doing teaching-wise. I know yourself, your wife, Jonas Golf, but, you know, I read an article about a month ago on Score Golf, and it talked about, you actually said a quote in there saying that people get so caught up in technique, they forget about how to teach how to get the ball in the hole and how to make that five into a four and a four into a three. Tell us a bit about that, those ideas.
Well, I think that, when people take lessons, they don't take lessons to swing better on the driving range. Most people, you know, they come to you and they say, well, they want to get rid of their hook or their slice, but it's all in an effort to score better. And I think... quite often, especially out here in Vancouver, a lot of people just try and stay on the driving range and they never take their practice to the course. You know, they have the mentality to try and perfect what they're doing on the range rather than realizing that, you know, they need to score well. And also realizing that no matter how good a player are you, very seldom do you have your A game. So you better learn to play with your B, C, D, or whatever game. And it's... you know, it's more about shooting good scores and, you know, trying to do it with the best technique you can, but trying to make sure that you can play well, and you can play well when you're playing badly. I think that's the, you know, that's the, or score well when you're playing badly. I think that's the trait of the great players you see. I mean, you know, last year, I forget about this year, but last year with Tiger, I think his stats were terrible, yet he was the best player on the tour because he knows how to, he knows when he's not playing well, how to play around things. And I think that's important for a lot of people to learn.
Phil, give us an example of you know, what that would be in a scenario when you're on the golf course.
Well, let's put it this way. You could say to a guy, you know, you hit the ball badly and you putt badly and you shot 68. How's that possible? But what it is, you know when you're not playing well. So you don't try and hit the shots that you need, that you would hit if you were playing well. You know, you instead of hitting the nice shot to 10 feet, you hit the mediocre shot to 20 feet because that's kind of how you're playing. Instead of... you know, hitting the bad shot and missing the green, you end up hitting it to 20 feet and you two putt just like, or maybe even one putt just like you would if you'd hit it to 10 feet. So, you know, that's basically, you know, what it's about. It's hard to sort of explain and it's hard to teach too, but that's, you know, the great players all do that and that's what people have to learn, and the way they learn it is by taking their game on the golf course and instead of spending, you know, you got to spend some time on the range, but instead of spending a lot of time on the range, you go and play five holes instead. And Nick Price, I remember when I was on the PGA Tour in 87 and I was playing badly one day and I said, oh, I'm going to leave and go and play, go to the range during a practice run. And he said, you know, Bobby Locke told him, the great Bobby Locke told him, rather play nine holes than go to the driving range because you're more likely to find what you're doing and do it better on the course than on the range. So
Phil, advice. Yeah, for sure. Now, Phil, tell us about, your career is phenomenal. I mean, growing up in South Africa, the friends that you've made there, and obviously you play golf with some phenomenal players. I think one day you told me over dinner one time some of the different players you've played with. But tell us a bit about some of those memories, some of your favorite memories, whether it's Canadian Tour-wise, PGA Tour-wise, and some might think it's, you know, a certain victory here and there, but I think others might think of just maybe it's driving somewhere, having dinner in a certain spot. Or I remember the last few years in Quebec, we had our assistant championship and you always said there's a certain place you always had dinner at, and now it was gone or it was closed down and you kind of felt bad about it. But tell us a bit about some of your memories.
Well, I would say that it's hard to imagine this, but the most fun I ever had playing golf was in Asia. You know, I just love playing in Asia for some reason. You know, even though I played in some great courses here in Canada and the United States and everything, but Asia was good. I think it was the bus trips to the golf course. You know, all the guys sort of getting together, and you know, sometimes conditions were very difficult. So people they sort of stuck together, and you know, even though you were competing against one another, you still were in this journey together, you know, and it was always, those were good times. But I was actually just, the other thing I was reminiscing the other day, when I was about 16 or 17, I played, Wayne Player was a good player in South Africa, Gary's son, and Nick Price, he's 5 years older than me, he had just turned pro, and there was a guy called Roddy Carr, who was one of the best Irish players. His father, Joe Carr, was like in the Hall of Fame. And one day we decided to have a game. And we played 36 holes just around the golf. And in the afternoon, nobody in the group made less than 10 birdies.
Wow.
So it was Wayne Player and I played, and we were both, I think, 16 at the time. We played Roddy and Nick, and we beat them in the afternoon. They beat us in the morning. But I just think of that as an unbelievable day of golf. I don't know what anybody shot, you know, because there's probably a few holes where you made a double or something. But there was just an unbelievable amount of birdies.
Yeah, that's incredible.
And nobody's there to witness it, really, apart from the four of us.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of birdies, you're probably got your game face on, ready to make some birdies this weekend. You're playing in the Vancouver Golf Tour, Vancouver Open. Tell us a little bit about the Vancouver Golf Tour and Fraser Mulholland and what he's done out there. We hear a lot about it in Ontario and seems to be going really well.
Well, you know, Fraser's done a great job. It's a good little tour for guys guys who aren't, well, there's quite a few Canadian tour, probably five or six Canadian tour players playing this week. But, you know, it's mainly for the guys in the lower mainland here in Vancouver to play and to keep their skills. And most of the events, you know, on Mondays, this is a three-day event. We have a couple three-day events, but most of them are just one-day events. So there's a couple weekend events too, from old tournaments like the Chilliwack Open and those kind of things. But it's a good little tour. It's made for, his idea is for young guys, because the winner of the Order of Merit gets their entry paid to the USQ school. I always say it's for young guys, not guys like me, but I do play on it and I certainly enjoy it. And he does a great job. So this week it's the Vancouver Open, played on three of the municipal courses in Vancouver, Fraserview, Langara, and McCleary. And they, you know, they're all pretty good courses. It's the second year they've done that. And it's pretty good.
Now, Phil, tell us about your game. I mean, you're a guy who always just keeps getting, it seems like, better and better and better. And every year, you know, I always see you at our Assistance Championship and you always say, Jeff, I'm not playing very well and we'll see what happens. And all of a sudden, you know, first round, you're third, second round, you're second, final round, you're, you know, top five again, usually. But you know, you're getting close to 50. I know it's hard to believe, but Are we going to see Phil Jonas go to the senior qualifying school and give it a shot?
You know, that's my plan right now, and I can go to the school. I'm 48. I can go to the school next fall. And so, yeah, I would. I'm definitely working on trying to get there. My game is, you know, since I stopped playing on the Canadian Tour, I feel like my game's actually got better.
Huh.
But one of the things is I don't practice that much. My golf is predominantly in these tournaments, which isn't good because, you know, every time I play, it's, I'm under pressure, you know, so I never really get a chance to work on my game. And having said that, I also don't really know what to expect. Like, I've had some good rounds. You know, this year I've broken the course record twice in tournaments at two different places, so that's, you know, that's pretty good. But then other days I tee it up and it's like I don't know what I'm doing. You know? So the good news is I'm inconsistent, and the bad news is I'm inconsistent.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Phil, tell us about. I mean, you're a busy guy. You've also done some commentating over the years, and I believe some recent Skins games. I believe this year as well. But everyone thinks it's so easy. But I know, and you know how difficult it actually is. But tell us a bit about commentating during these events.
Well, the commentating, I really enjoy it. I wish I could do more. I wish there was more in Canada to do. It's and hopefully they think I'm good enough that they would ask me to do more. But I really enjoy it. It's a chance to, you know, to be close to some great players. But it is difficult because quite often, you know, there's a producer talking in your ear. You know, this year at the Skins game, I had to interview the winners on, you know, when a guy won a hole. My two guys were Retief Goosen and Mike Weir. So if ever they won a hole, I had to interview them. And, you know, I've never interviewed anybody. I mean, it's easy to talk about the guy's got a 7-iron from 160 or something. But so interviewing guys was difficult, especially when Retief, the first nine, he kept winning, you know, and eventually, you know, the third time he won, I go, man, I don't know what to really ask him this time. And so I'm asking him, I've run out of questions, and I hear the producer in my ear, Larry Isaac, who's a great guy, and he says, you got to ask him one more question. I go, I'm thinking, well, I don't know what I can ask him. And I've asked him everything I possibly could. And, you know, Retief's not exactly the most talkative guy, so it's, you know, it's kind of difficult. But
yeah.
It was a lot of fun. And, you know, doing those Canadian Opens was fantastic. It's too bad that TSN and CTV don't have, you know, the rights to the Canadian Open anymore, because I think they did a great job. And also they did a good job of promoting the Canadians. You know, they always showed every Canadian little story, you know.
Yep.
You know, in Canada, you know, I'm Canadian now. We need to do more for the Canadians because, you know, when they play in South Africa, they do everything for the South Africans. Or they play in Australia, they do everything for the Australians. So, you know, we in Canada should make sure, you know, whether it's on TV or whatever, that we do more for the Canadians.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Well, Phil, great stuff. Really appreciate you joining us. You're a great ambassador for the Canadian PGA, and you know, Scott and I obviously enjoy hanging out with you and talking to you. So I know you're on the tee, I think, in about 25 minutes, so all the best. I'm sure you'll be in the 60s again like you always are, and we'll see you in about 2 weeks at Gorge Vale for the Canadian PGA Citizens Championship.
Yes, thanks, Jeff, and I'm looking forward to Gorge. It should be great.
Beautiful. Thanks, Phil.
Play well, Phil.
Phil Jonas, Scotty, what a guy. Eh? He's tell us a story about, like, we both have some good stories. We didn't want to say it on the air there. We got some good stories about Phil. Like,
well,
was it the Breyers you said?
Yeah,
it was?
Breyers, 2004.
We won't say who, but
2005 Canadian PGA Assistance Championship at the Breyers, and one of the guys played with him, and he came off the golf course and looked at me. I said, "Oh, how'd Phil play?" And he said, "Me, like, I was almost like, you know, it'd be a thrill to play with Phil."
Yeah,
you know, pardon the poetry there.
Yeah,
but I said, "How did Phil play?" And he said, "That guy is the luckiest guy I've ever played golf with." And I said, what do you mean? He goes, "He didn't hit it very well, and he shot 68, and I couldn't believe it."
Yeah. Well, the same thing happened. We were in Quebec, and Phil called me and said, "Hey, I'm going to be there early. Want to play practice round with us?" And I said, "Yeah, that'd be great. You know, always fun to play with those guys." And so myself and other staff and Phil played. And I was raving about it. I was telling the staff, like, "Hey, this guy's going to be so fun to play with, past champion, great guy, the whole deal." And they're all pumped to play with him. And the first five holes or six holes hits the ball all over the ice. Like, I mean, unbelievable, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's missing fairways, missing greens. And sure enough, six holes later, he probably should be two over par.
Yeah.
He's four under.
Yeah.
Chipping in, From the par five, he hits it like right over the flag, knocks it in for eagle. Like the guy just, and this is what he talks about, how making that four into a three, it's, you know, for some average golfers might see a bad lie or around the green, they might go, oh, if I get the ball on the green and then two putt, then I'll make, I'll make my five. Where Phil's thinking, if I can hold a shot and steal a three, I just stole a three, right? Like it's incredible. It's a great talent to have. And it's, I think it's, he says it's hard to teach, and I think it is. It's kind of have, you have to have that, you have to be aggressive, have the guts to pull it off, right? But pretty pretty impressive talent. And nice to hear he's going to senior qualifying school, I think.
We forgot to ask him, too. He's got some pretty good kids in his stable in Vancouver. He's coaching a lot of nice players.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's, you know, inspiration for him as well, you know, moving forward.
Yeah.
Q school for the senior tour. I'm excited to see how he fares because, I mean, we've seen quite a few of our guys, you know, try to go, whether it be Ken Tarling, Graham Gunn, Dave Bell, you know, the list goes on. And I think that, you know, when you talk about Jim Rutledge as well, but I think Phil, you know, has a real legitimate shot at least getting conditional status.
Canadian Tour champion.
Yeah, totally. Know. And I think that, you know, hopefully he's got the backing. I know that, you know, when he decided to quit, it did come down to the financial part of it. And the fact, you know, he was a realistic guy. He's one of the guys in the Canadian PGA system that I look at. Back in the day when you played the Canadian Tour, you got credits towards your Class A status.
Right.
And you're able, in what Phil did is he took advantage of those credits. He actually got his Class A status while he was playing the Canadian Tour. And he wrote his Class A exam while he was playing the Tour. And during the off season, he'd do all the lab reports and all that stuff and get them done that way, because he always knew in the back of his mind, he said, you know what, if golf doesn't work out, I want to make sure that I position myself you know, to be a club professional, and you know, whether it be a teacher or working at a facility. And so he's a guy that sort of, you know, it's good and bad. It's bad from a standpoint that, you know, he wasn't maybe focusing directly on golf, but it's good in the sense that he's, you know, he's forward thinking, and you know, he knows that maybe golf isn't going to work out for him in the longer term. So I thought it was that's a neat story.
Pretty cool story too there. But we talk about he's playing 16, 17 years old and they made 40 birdies in that group.
Yeah.
40 birdies in one round is ridiculous. But anyway, great stuff. Head to break right now, Scott. When we come back, we'll get on Mr. Jason Logan from Score Golf. I think he's the managing editor now.
That's right.
He's moving up, this guy. He started off at, I think, as a, just a kind of a writer type thing.
Coffee getter.
Yeah, coffee getter and a photocopier. Now he's one of the top dogs there. And the controversial issue came out with the top 100 golf courses. There's blogs are now going on talking about, is it worth it? Is it not worth it? Does anybody care? Some people say they really do care.
It's crazy.
You know, it's crazy, the argument. So we come back, wait on Jason Logan on the horn here to talk about Score Golf and the top 100 rankings when we come back on the Canadian PGA Radio Show. Welcome back to the Canadian PGA Radio Show. Jeff Dagman here alongside Scott Pritchard. And we go from the playing side of things with Phil Jonas there, Scott, to Mr. Jason Logan, managing editor of Score Golf. And you know, obviously they're a major voice in Canadian golf. I believe their tagline is the voice of Canadian golf, but they do some great stuff in Canadian golf for everybody. They cover a lot of stuff that we do and, you know, Golf Canada, as you name it. Mm-hmm. But a big move they did is this new issue, the top 100 golf courses. We'll get right into that with Jason, and here he is right now, Mr. Jason Logan. Jason, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for making it clear that you've moved away from the player category to talk.
Yes. Well, yeah, definitely not really. Well, you're a nice player yourself.
Jay, nice player.
You got a nice game. You got a nice game. And but more importantly, Jason, you've been a busy boy with this issue. And before we get into all the issues around the issue, tell us a bit about how long it takes to put this together.
Well, to be honest with you, it takes, you know, really from the day after we closed the voting window for the last top 100, which would have been 2008. Because it's really an ongoing process. The panelists are encouraged to vote for courses or rate courses anytime, whatever course they play. So I get a lot of calls from panelists who say, you know, now that the window is closed, I can take my time and not do any rankings. And I say, no, keep ranking, because we want this huge database of ratings online. We have courses calling all the time, wondering where they stand with regards to the top 100. So to be quite honest with you, it really is a two-year process that obviously ramps up 4 or 5 months before we publish, taking lots of calls from panelists, from golf courses with questions, setting benchmarks and stuff like that. So it's a part-time job on top of the full-time job that I already have would be the best way to say it.
Jay, talk about the rankings and actually the ranking system. What's the ranking system comprised of? And is there any ever, you know, does that sway from year to year? In other words, do some of the ranking criteria drop off and you add others? You know, there's a lot of talk obviously about the conditioning and moving forward and the water issues and stuff like that, but maybe just get into the criteria for ranking.
Sure. I mean, it's certainly evolved over the years, Scott, since we started rating golf courses in 1988. As it stands now, we have 102 panelists across the country. They are asked to go online and rate golf courses on a number of criteria. And those criteria would be things like challenge, beauty, design, par three holes, par four holes, par five holes, conditioning, strategy, and fun. And fun carries the biggest weight because we do feel that if you have fun playing a golf course, it means that you like that golf course. So we like to have fun as a big weight. And to your point, conditioning, which used to carry a weighting of 15%, we've actually dropped it down to 5%.
Wow.
We changed the wording on conditioning. We used to have it peppered with words like lush and green. And so when panelists would go on, those were the things they'd be rating. But we don't have that anymore. We just want the conditioning category is determined by whether the golf course is healthy. And healthy doesn't necessarily mean green. And I think there's a big movement in the golf industry going towards that. And we agree. And it might evolve again. I've had some conversations with superintendents, with some people I respect in the golf industry. And the categories could change, could evolve. Just the descriptions and things like that could change moving forward, certainly.
Now, Jason, we all know that all the rankings are based on how much they buy for ads in Score Golf magazine, right?
Of course. I can't figure out what the number one complaint is, whether there's too many Ontario courses on the list or whether this is all just a marketing ploy and golf courses buy their way onto the top 100, but obviously there couldn't be anything further from the truth. I encourage golf courses to invite panelists out to courses, of course, because you can't rank a golf course unless you've played it. And some of these clubs are private clubs, and obviously you can't just walk up and pay a green fee to play there. So any club that calls me and asks for advice about getting on the top 100, I don't necessarily say, well, here's how you get on the top 100. But I do say, here's our 102 panelists. Here's all of those who have allowed us to release their email address. Do what you want with that. Invite them out. I encourage courses to invite them out maybe at a quiet time in their schedule so as not to take away from member play. Maybe pair them with an experienced member so that member can sort of tell the story about the golf course. But it's really just about guys getting out and playing and seeing as many golf courses as they can.
Now, Jay, it seems to me that this year there's a lot more talk and debate and, you know, some misconceptions out there with respect to the top 100. And I'm not sure how you feel about that in terms. Do you think it has to do with the advent of the internet and more people sort of getting involved in chat rooms and that sort of thing? And I mean, you guys are at the forefront of that, right? You want people to debate that, which is it, you know, they say all media or all press, bad press or good press is good press, right? But it seems like this year there's a lot more talk about it. And even from, you know, some of your own members of the media fraternity seem to be, you know, I don't want to use their word bashing, but there is some definitely negative, talking going on about the top 100.
Sure. There's those media colleagues out there who believe that rating golf courses is a waste of time. I think is a couple of quotes I've heard. I will just say this. You mentioned off the start that Score Golf, our tagline, is the voice of Canadian golf, and we really feel very strongly about that. We're one of only two national golf magazines in the country, the other one being Golf Canada. We're one that is not beholden to a golf association of any sort. And as a journalist, as somebody in the media, I do feel it's our responsibility to tell the story of Canadian golf. And I think rating golf courses is something that gets discussion going, and I think that's an important job that we have. This top 100 issue is the most widely read issue that we produce every second year. We obviously do the TV show on TSN. We do webcasts on our scoregolf.com. The numbers, quite frankly, Scott and Jeff, are staggering, the amount of views that those videos have received. And I just think the more discussion, the better. If it's not going to be a rating that pleases everybody, and it shouldn't be, because if it was, then there would be no point in doing it anymore. And, you know, say the year that we stop getting criticisms and complaints is the year that we're not going to do it anymore, because we really feel responsibility and a purpose to get discussion going, whether it's on courses or equipment or players or whatever. That's our job as members of the media, and I think this is something that does a really good job of that. So I'm quite proud of all the discussion, and whether it's positive or negative, it really doesn't matter.
Jason, tell us about the move to the newsstand issue. I mean, I think this was you did the previous one with the instruction piece, but now this piece as well. Tell us about that idea. Is it trying to promote sales of people that probably might not get the issue if they're not a member of a certain club or anything like that? But tell us a bit about the move to the newsstand.
Yeah, it's certainly no secret that in the last few years, you know, with the economy the way it is, that you can't just rely on advertising for revenue. And so I think the move to the newsstand was, for one, you know, to try and get some more revenue in here. And two, just to be out there more and just to be even more authoritative by being on the newsstands. We tried it earlier this year with an instruction issue that was on sale that went well. I don't know the numbers of the sales so far, but anecdotally, I've heard it's gone really well. In fact, I was at my local golf town in Etobicoke 2 nights ago, and the gal there told me that they sold out of the magazines in a heartbeat, and she was kind of upset that we didn't give them any more, and I just kind of played dumb, and I said that's interesting and so forth, but I was happy to hear that, and it's just we're actually going to do another one, another newsstand this year. We're going to preview the 2011 PGA Tour season. That's going to be coming out before Christmas, so that'll be a book that previews the season, helps with some poolies out there, some fantasy leagues, some experts' picks. We're going to commission some experts, some so-called experts, I guess, to make predictions and break down another top 100, and that's the 100 best players going into the 2011 PGA Tour season. So top 100 book is closed, but we're already working on another newsstand issue in addition to our fall clubhouse issue, which should be hitting clubs soon, and that ranks Canada's best new courses. So another ranking that will be updated.
Now, Jay, tell us, for people that may not know Jason Logan, tell us about how you got involved with Score Golf, you know, maybe where you went to school, where you grew up, where you started playing golf, if you, in fact, did play golf, because there are certain guys in the golf media that don't play golf. And tell us about how you got involved in Score Golf. And then finally, tell us what the highlight of your career has been working at Score Golf.
Sure. I grew up in a little small village, Blackstock, Ontario, which is just north of Oshawa, about 20 minutes. Went to high school in Port Perry, Ontario. And very proud to say that I'm a graduate of Carleton University's journalism program. Go Ravens. 2001 graduate, and I started out with Score in 2003, and it's kind of a funny story. I was an avid reader of the magazine and the website back then, which was really, you know, just a fledgling website compared to what it is now, and I just happened to send Bob Weeks an email and told him I was an avid golfer. I grew up playing golf at Sunny Bray Golf Course in Port Perry and later Wolf Run. And mentioned that I was a journalism grad, and he invited me in to chat, and we had a good conversation. And about a month later, he called me, and he said, I think I have a job for you, which turned out to be an assistant editor's position. So I started in 2003 and just have been here ever since, and now the managing editor. And I guess as far as highlights, you know, I started in 2003, which, as everyone knows, is a pretty good year for Canadian golf. Shortly after I started, Mike Weir won at the Bob Hope. He won at Riviera. He later won the Masters, obviously. Dave Barr won on the Champions Tour. David Moreland won on the Nationwide Tour that year. And Marlene Street won the United States Senior Amateur at 69, which is a huge story that sometimes gets overlooked. So I think that 2003 season was a highlight for me in that it was my first year, and it was just a whirlwind season. And maybe another highlight is last year I got the chance to go down to Kohler, Wisconsin and play Whistling Straits, which I know, Jeff, you recently attended the PGA there. And for all the criticism that the golf course received, my father and I got to go down there for 4 days and play together early one morning. And that was a pretty neat experience to get to take him to one of a real good golf course in the States, a place that he would never get to play unless he had a contact in the media industry like myself, and we just had an enjoyable time, so that certainly stands out.
Now, Jason, one more quick story. Tell us about, you told us a story last year, it was awesome, and I'm still laughing about it, but that year you started, I think it was the Mike Weir issue, there was an editing error on one of the pages.
Yeah, well, that was obviously a hectic time. That Mike Weir's Masters victory fell about 4 days before our May issue was going to press, which is traditionally one of our biggest issues in that it has the full equipment guide, apparel guide. So it's already a big issue that was made, I believe, 32 pages bigger by Mike Weir's Masters victory.
Wow.
And as a young guy, I was just sort of told, listen, you know, the senior guys here that were there then or are still there now, we're going to work on this Mike Weir thing. Obviously, Bob Weeks being down at the Masters, you need to take care of the whole equipment supplement and apparel supplement. And I thought I did a very good job of that until I was later told that there was a typo with regards to the word golf shirt, in which the word shirt was missing the R. get your hands on that 2003 Mike Weir Masters victory commemorative issue, because maybe it'll be worth money one day down the road because of that egregious mistake.
Yeah, but there's only 500,000 copies, so not really a big deal, right, Jason? Yeah.
Jay, speaking of blunders, what about the blunder of the rankings being released before the issue got released and then the issue getting released prior to? What happened there?
I was just, you know, one of the advantages of being a subscriber to a magazine is that you get the issue before it goes on newsstands.
Right.
The plan, I don't know exactly what happened, to be honest with you, Scott. I try and keep myself separate from both sales and circulation as much as possible, so I'm not influenced in any manner. But essentially, there was a miscommunication in that these particular magazines should have not gone out as other subscriber magazines do, and they ended up going out ahead of time anyways. And it wasn't all that big of a deal because, you know, all it did, it got the list out there on boards such as Golf Atlas and TorontoGolfNuts.com, and just got some conversation stirring before the issue came out, and it's not really a bad thing to get advanced press, so to speak.
Yeah, you know what, it shows you how much those guys love the golf rankings, love talking about it too. But
also shows how ethical Jason is.
That's right. Jason, really appreciate you joing us today. You're doing great work. Obviously, Scott and I are enjoy seeing everything that comes out from you guys. And keep it up, and we'll talk to you soon.
I appreciate the time, guys.
Perfect. Thanks, Jason.
Thanks, Jay.
There you go, Scott. Jason Logan, Score Golf, the rankings. How do you feel about the rankings, Scott? You know, as you mentioned in the interview there, you know, some of you guys taking shots. Some of you guys saying, I heard one guy, won't name names, but saying, I'm so glad we're not involved with rankings, never will be. Somebody saying that, you know, how do you feel if you're course number 98 out of 100, you're, you know, the 96th loser or something like that. And I don't agree personally. I think that, you know, how many courses do you think they'll squeak into 99, 98? And they tell all the members, oh, we're one of the top 100 golf courses in Canada. Hmm.
I tend to agree with you. I mean, I don't have an opinion either way. It's a fine line, right? I mean, you know, the top 100 is a staple, quite frankly, in Canadian golf. And, you know, they've been going at it since 1988, as Jason explained. And, you know, I think it's a necessity. I think the debate is great, whether or not you're in favor of it. And, you know, for some media guys to say, you know, our publication would never do that. I mean, hopefully there's not sour grapes involved there because of, you know, the publicity that it does get. And like I said, you know, all media is good media, whether it's bad or good. But, you know, I like the list. There's a few courses on there that I particularly like that I think should be on there. One of them is widely spoken about is Kawartha. It's a great track. The Ian Andrew renovation with the bunkering is awesome. You know, perhaps the rankers didn't have an opportunity. You know, that's a lot of the challenges, is that the rankers just don't have an opportunity to go and play all the different golf courses. And, you know, I've been fortunate enough to play a lot of different golf courses, in particular in Ontario, you know, with the job that I'm doing. But, you know, there's always going to be courses that aren't on the list that think they deserve to be on the list, and whether or not they're on the list and higher ranking, that sort of thing. Me personally, I think it's, you know, whether or not you're 100 or one, I think it's just great to be on the list.
Now, how hard is it in the U.S.? They do the same thing in the U.S. to do top 100. Like, mm-hmm. How hard is that? They've got a million golf courses, right? And I mean, I you and I both have been lucky to play a few courses in the U.S. that are top 100. I think it's really cool that when someone says, oh, you want to play here? And I'm, you know, looking it up, I'm like, wow, this is a top 25 course in the U.S. Totally. It's really cool, right? As opposed to just being, this is a nice golf course. You don't really know where it ranks. And, you know, I mean,
you're right. That's the first thing that I do. Like when we go to Florida, I'm like, okay, where, let's try and find a top golf course. Right?
Yeah.
And it's like, in some respects, it's like, you feel great to tell, oh, I played there, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, I played there. But
And sometimes you're like, this wasn't even that good.
Right.
But maybe some...
But there's, you know, there's some great golf courses, maybe not in Florida, but in the United States for sure, that aren't on that ranking. There's, you know, there's a course in South Carolina that Gar Hamilton told me about. I forget the name. I think it's called Millwood, and it's in near Greenville, and it's unbelievable. Yeah. Extremely private. So a lot of guys wouldn't get a chance to play there, but it's unbelievable.
Especially in the U.S. I mean, the U.S. is the kings of the high-end private golf clubs, right? Like, there's so many of them. Everywhere you go, I mean... We're always down in Florida for our Club Pro Championship at PGA Village, and there's got to be, within a half an hour or an hour, there's got to be at least, you know, 15, 20 solid high-end private tracks, right? More, you know what I mean? Like, it's unbelievable, but...
There's right across the street from one another. Like, if you look at Seminole and right across the street, Lost Tree.
Yeah.
All in that area.
All those guys, like Old Palms down there, like all the guys, they're all members of the same spot, right? And the Jupiter's
place. The Old Palm was like $250,000 to join, and you had to buy a minimum $1 million property on the... in the development, like, it's ridiculous.
Actually, I got a funny story quickly that I'll say. Speaking of one of these private golf clubs, one of the guys that we know is a head pro, was it the head pro at PGA Village where we do our club pro, got hired at the Ritz-Carlton Jupiter. So he tells us one time, come down and play. And we thought, it sounds nice. Obviously, it's a Ritz-Carlton. Well, it should be pretty nice. We get down there and they have the guy with the whole white uniform and the white hat on the front gate. And we've got we rent a minivan for the week because we have a Dodge Caravan, bright red minivan, because we have to have all of our tournament supplies in there. And there's four of us, and we peel up to the front of the door there, and the guy goes, hi, guys. And we're like, oh, hi. And he goes, are you guys lost? And we're like, no, we're not lost. We're playing here today. He goes, no, you're not. Are you guys lost? We're like, no, we're playing golf here today. He goes, no, you're not playing golf here today. I guarantee that. We're like, no, we're actually playing golf here. And this debate went on back and forth, and we said, oh, we're guests of the head pro there. And all of a sudden, the guy felt terrible, right? And he says, oh, if you want to go in there and valet park your car, go ahead. So we drive in and there's Bentley, you know, Mercedes. Yeah. And we've got the Dodge Caravan. So I see a sign that said employee parking. So I peeled it over to the right and parked by the employees and then just toss our shoes on and get right to the first tee type thing, right? But it's pretty neat to play some of those places if you can get out there. But anyway, folks, we're going to head out right now. We'll come back for, I believe, Scott, next week or our next show will be our final show of the year. We'll wrap up the whole entire season, talk about a few things. The playoffs will be over, I think, or close to it.
Who's your pick?
For the whole, you can't go wrong with Matt Kuchar. This guy's unbelievable.
Nice player.
This guy's playing so well.
Yeah.
Everyone likes the guy. You know, we'll see what happens. But for Canadians, it'll be big. We'll talk about it next week. You know, Graham Dillette has the fall series I think he's 126 on the money list.
Mm-hmm.
Top 125 got their card. So he's got to make a move. And apparently had a bit of an injury. But, well, maybe even Stephen get
a bunch of nationwide guys, Hearn, Mills,
right in the hunt there, right? So maybe we'll get one of these guys on, talk about the kind of push for the end of the season there, and see where it goes. And I mean, obviously, it'd be nice to next year. I think we're going to have more Canadians out there again next year. It seems like there's some guys that have some unbelievable talent that are right on the cusp of making it, whether it's nationwide tour, Canadian tour, or you name it. But it'd be nice to watch these guys play. So we'll get one of them on next week for our final show, and we'll wrap the whole season up on the Canadian PGA Radio Show.